this week, the final week before the elections, President Reagan says stay the course.
We're doing the job that must be done, and we're seeing unmistakable signs that our program is working.
The Democrats say change the course.
There is no corner to be turned so long as we continue down the blind alley of Reagan economics.
And a rash of copycat poisonings makes Halloween a time for nervousness.
If anything looks suspicious or smells suspicious, be suspicious.
This is Rob Armstrong, CBS News. The political winds blew hot this week, President Reagan defending his economic policies and Democrats from coast to coast attacking them. The latest CBS News, New York Times poll shows more than half of those people surveyed say they'll vote for Democrats for Congress. But at the same time, the president's job rating improved. Kathleen Frankovic is director of surveys for CBS News.
Mr. Reagan's approval rating has gone up, and in particular, Mr. Reagan's approval rating on his handling of the economy has gone up. Secondly, while people claim the country has been hurt by Reaganomics, they think that eventually things will get better under it, and they don't want to make drastic changes in the president's economic program.
If there is one issue overriding this election, it is the economy. And as Deborah Potter reports, Mr. Reagan chose to meet the issue head on.
The president wound up his campaign travels this week with stops in the South and the West, the areas where he did the best in 1980 and where his personal popularity could make a difference for Republican candidates. They're also politically safe areas where unemployment is not the major issue. So Mr. Reagan drew heavily partisan crowds and few demonstrators. At a rally in Raleigh, North Carolina, he unveiled a new slogan for the final week of the campaign, urging the American people to vote their hopes on Tuesday, not their fears. But on the road in the West, his message was at best a bit muddled. At each stop, there seemed to be a different theme. In Wyoming and Montana, it was Social Security, the president denouncing the Democrats for spreading what he called a dishonest canard that he wants to cut benefits. In Utah, it was jobs, Mr. Reagan reacting to a prediction of higher unemployment by pointing to a new training program. And in New Mexico, it was defense, the president promising more military spending while denying he's being warlike. He seemed to be on the defensive this trip, his strategy of attacking the Democrats diluted by his willingness to answer their every charge. But the White House still hopes that his personal stumping will be enough to keep the Senate Republican and hold losses in the House under 20. Deborah Potter, CBS News, Washington.
While the president was defending his economic track record, Senator Edward Kennedy took to the attack, sounding what amounts to the Democratic campaign theme.
Again and again, we hear the Republicans call to be patient. Patience will not pay a monthly mortgage or a utility bill. Patience will not safeguard the Social Security of our senior citizens. Patience will not protect them from an administration which is waiting to spring a November surprise, a secret post-election plan to slash Social Security and tarnish the golden years of the elderly.
President Reagan this week met with Nobel Prize-winning economist George Stigler of the University of Chicago. After the meeting, Stigler was trotted into the White House briefing room to meet with reporters. There he left White House aides red-faced when he was asked about supply-side economics.
It's a gimmick used to package certain ideas. And the supply-siders, by saying, let's cut down on lots of taxes, let's cut down on a set of regulations, were performing a service. Where they went too far was in claiming so much for and saying that if we do that, that alone will take care of inflation and things like that.
Asked what kind of grade he's given the president so far, Stigler said it wouldn't be an A, but rather an incomplete. Reporters were amused, but the president's staff wasn't. They hurried Stigler away as quickly as they could. The World This Week continues in 1 minute.
Will the unemployment rate affect the coming elections? Will voters stay the course or throw the ends out?
Where is the country heading? These are all questions facing the American electorate this fall. I'm Reed Collins, CBS News.
And I'm Charles Osgood. We'll co-anchor CBS News election night coverage Tuesday, November 2nd on the CBS Radio Network.
Correspondent George Herman will join us in the anchor booth to analyze key local races and trends.
Bill Lynch will cover the congressional contest, while Susan Spencer follows the Senate races.
Other
colleagues will report on state issues and various governorships and check in at National Committee headquarters to monitor reactions.
And, along with our special coverage, you'll get election summaries in News on the Hour broadcasts and regional updates from exclusive Net Alert.
Vote first, then join us as CBS News counts your vote election night, Tuesday, November 2nd, on most of these CBS radio network stations. Hear it here.
By better than 3-1, members of the United Auto Workers Union this week voted not to go on strike against Chrysler. Instead, they agreed to extend the current contract until after the first of the year when new negotiations will be opened. UAW President Douglas Frazier says the union members knew the potential impact of their vote.
A strike would have been risky. A strike would have put the company in jeopardy. I mean, we knew that, and you know, you can't underrate the intelligence of our membership. I think our membership realized that. I think that went into this vote.
Wall Street began the week with its biggest one-day decline since the Great Depression, but the stock market spent much of the week seesawing back and forth across the 1,000 mark, mostly a reaction to the economic news. Doug Poling reports.
The spooks and goblins of inflation and recession are not haunting the economy as much this Halloween as they have in the past couple of years. To be sure, the recession is still with us, but there are signs it could be about over. It was announced this week that the government's index of leading economic indicators rose by 0.5% during September. The index is a compilation of statistics designed to provide a forecast of where things are heading. According to this barometer, the recession is ending right about now, and prospects are good for a steady, if slow, recovery. The really good news is about inflation. It was announced this week that consumer prices went up only 0.2% last month. So far this year, inflation has come to just 4.8%, a lot better than the double-digit rates we've been having. But trouble remains in this economy. The big problem is unemployment. It's over 10%, and there were predictions this week it'll go still higher. A lot of big companies, including Ford Motor, U.S. Steel, and Pan American World Airways, this week reported huge losses in the third quarter. And on Wall Street, investors apparently decided to take some of the big profits they ran up on paper over the past couple of months. The Dow Jones Industrials lost almost 40 points this week, standing at 991.81. Doug Poling, CBS News, New York.
John DeLorean, the one-time jet-setter and sports car maker, was indicted by a federal grand jury in Los Angeles this week on 9 counts of drug trafficking and racketeering. DeLorean allegedly tried to put together a multi-million dollar cocaine deal in an effort to save his bankrupt car company. He is free now on $10 million bail. The World This Week continues in 1 minute.
I'm Stanley Marcus, and if you're looking for personalized hot air balloons or want a life-size sculpture of your favorite person, I can help you out. But if you call to ask me how to steer a balloon or where you can learn to chisel your own sculptures, I'd quickly dial my local library. You can call your library, too, anytime you have a question. With its stacks filled with books, magazines, records, and more, the library is the logical place to call when you need fast answers. Some libraries even have night lines, so you can get the information you need day or night just by picking up the phone. So keep the number of your local library handy. There's never a question too unusual for the librarian to answer the phone. After all, if I can call to ask how to steer a balloon, you can ask just about anything. Call the library. It's the answer place.
A public service message from the American Library Association and this station.
An epidemic of copycat poisonings emerged this week, people imitating the Chicago Tylenol poisoner. There were reports of poisoned coal remedies, poisoned soft drinks and orange juice, acid-laced eye drops and mouthwash, and doped candy. All that has put a huge question mark over the traditional Halloween trick-or-treating. New Jersey Governor Thomas Kane this week signed a bill aimed at discouraging those who would contaminate foods and drugs.
That conduct cannot and will not be tolerated. And what this piece of legislation says is, first of all, that I can promise that we will spare no expense in tracking down the perpetrators of any offense affecting candy and our children on Halloween. No plea bargaining, no parole, anything in any candy, that person is going to jail for 6 months, and 6 months will be the minimum.
The Chicago Tribune received a letter from James Lewis, who is a prime suspect in the case of the poisoned Tylenol. Lewis said that he didn't commit the 7 Tylenol murders. More from Ned Potter.
Lewis and his wife, Leanne, have been on the run from Chicago apparently since before the Tylenol killings happened, and their letter to the Chicago Tribune denying responsibility for the murders did not tell investigators much that they had not already deduced. The Lewis letter is a good example of where the Tylenol case stands this week. The Lewis lead was complicated, but detectives say it apparently leads nowhere. Another possible suspect, Roger Arnold, has many circumstantial connections to the case. But 3 weeks after police found him, sources say there is still nothing on him. At one point, a Chicago newspaper even reported that a relative of one of the victims was suspected of the killings. But the task force quickly answered that that relative had taken a lie detector test and passed with flying colors. As for the Lewises, Illinois Attorney General Tyrone Fainer said that if they are as innocent as they claim, they should turn themselves in.
It's our feeling that if you continue to run, you'll be caught in any event. I can understand you're running if indeed you are responsible for the terrible cyanide murders. But if your letter to us is true, that is all the more reason for you to turn yourself in.
3 dozen copycat tampering cases were confirmed, another 300 rumored around the nation, and 40 towns passed bans on trick-or-treating. Ned Potter, CBS News, Chicago.
A lot of questions and not many answers in Britain's latest spy scandal. Jeffrey Arthur Prime, once a Russian language specialist at Britain's top secret communications center, is accused of funneling information to the Kremlin. Dan Revive reports.
Prime was arrested in July and charged with espionage. Since then, he cannot be named in the British media so as not to prejudice his forthcoming trial. So when Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher was asked about last weekend's New York Times report, which said America wants to know more about the damage to the listening post in Cheltenham, England, Thatcher put out a statement saying the matter is sub judice, meaning still before the courts, and thus she could reveal nothing. All intriguing, of course, but not yet confirmation that the Soviet Union learned what the West was hearing and thus was able to feed false information. But for the first time, security at the Cheltenham listening post has been questioned, and some politicians say British intelligence should be somehow accountable to Parliament. Right now, it's not. Dan Revive, CBS News, London.
And as expected, Spain's Socialist Party won a big victory in this week's national elections. At 40 years old, Felipe González becomes Europe's youngest government leader. Pope John Paul II is now in Spain, the first time a pope has ever set foot on Spanish soil. The world this week continues in 1 minute.
Hello, this is Cliff Robertson. I'd like to say a few words about those very special people who save millions of lives every year, yet they never receive any medals. In fact, you never hear their names. These quiet heroes are volunteer blood donors who supply the more than 30,000 pints of blood used every day. More donors are needed if we hope to keep up with the demand. Only 5% of those eligible donate blood. The procedure is safe and simple, and the entire process takes less than an hour. There is no substitute for human blood. An emergency can happen at any time when you or someone you love requires blood in a hurry. It can mean the difference between life and death. Won't you give blood today and join the ranks of the quiet heroes?
A public service of this station and the American Association of Blood Banks.
China announced officially this week what every school child has known for years. There are more people in China than in any other country on Earth. 1,008,175,288, give or take a few souls. The census figures were produced by more than 5 million census takers. That's more census takers than the populations of Iceland, Honduras, Kuwait, Samoa, and Barbados combined. The World This Week was produced by Richard Wilson. Technical supervision by Keith Park. I'm Rob Armstrong, CBS News.
CBS News, this is Paul Lockwood. It's only an educated guess on John Dean's part, but the former White House counsel says in a forthcoming book he feels that it was Alexander Haig who was the so-called deep throat, the source who provided information to Washington Post reporter Bob Woodward on the Watergate scandal. So reports Time magazine. As for the man who later became Secretary of State, he doesn't think much of the claim, as Sam Ford reports from Washington.
Reached at his home, Alexander Haig seemed surprised to learn that John Dean had named him as Deep Throat, but he wasted no time denying it.
It's absurd, and it's probably commercially motivated.
I wasn't even in the White House at the time. I was Vice Chief of Staff of the Army, doing the business of the United States Army. I didn't even go back to the White House until May, following the dismissal of Haldeman and Ehrlichman.
John Dean admits his naming of Haig was based on circumstantial evidence. Time magazine names three others at the White House who could have been Deep Throat because of their positions. Sam Ford, CBS News, Washington.
A hostage drama is reportedly unfolding at this hour near Winnipeg, Manitoba in Canada. Officials at the Stony Mountain Penitentiary there say that about 40 inmates, including a convicted killer, are holding four guards hostage. Officials are meeting at this hour to decide what to do about the situation.